4,754 people registered for General Assembly, 4,754 people on site, a few hundred hangers-on who didn't register but would sneak into things from time to time, and 105 delegates off-site participated fully in General Assembly by observing the webcast as it happened, by voting when there were votes, and by expressing their voice in our participatory democracy. GA is, of course, a time when we do make some decisions. We elected new members to our Board of Trustees, and what is interesting is we lowered significantly the median age of the people on the UA Board of Trustees. We're trying to think about the future of this church, the future of this association, the future of this movement, and we're trying to take steps to continue to be relevant for the future. We elected a financial advisor, and it was challenging to hear just a few days before GA began that the UUA had a significant budget shortfall this year. And once it was explained, it was easier to swallow. We had an old generous giver who used to give $1.5 million a year to the UUA, and that person died. And so he gave a big amount of money to the endowment, but in terms of his pledge, if you will, it was zero. So the fact that we were $1.3 million in the hole is a problem, is a challenge, but it was explained and it's understood. But having a financial advisor who's able to assist the board in understanding what the staff is doing is an important part of our democracy. And what one of the things that was great was the outgoing development director who works for the staff was honored by people rappelling off the side of the convention center, you know, holding ropes and jumping down 8 stories. And people pledging for their friends to rappel off the side of the convention center. Peter Morales promised the Ministers Association that if we were able to raise $100,000 that he would go, and so of course he did. And the fact of the matter is they raised over $500,000 that afternoon, and people digging a little deeper to watch their friends risk their lives. I will tell you that Amy Williams Clark and I went and signed up, but they ran out of places for us. And the incoming development director, I gave her a very hard time. I said, gee, I haven't seen you up there yet. And she said, oh, I went this morning. I said, oh yeah, what time? She said, 4 o'clock. I said, oh, I don't think anybody was around. How many times did you go? She said, I'm sure at least 4 times. We took a step toward adjusting our bylaws, and that has a little bit to do, again, with this relevancy. In parts of our country, districts are going out of existence and creating larger regions. And so there's language in our bylaws, and of course this is the book of everything that goes on at GA, and you can see a workshop or two or other things. The bylaws are posted here. But we needed to be sure that our bylaws reflect what's really happening. And we don't want these vested bylaws that are holding us back and describing us in ways that are not how we're really functioning. Not how ideally we ought to function in some perfect bylaw world, but how it is we really function with each other and finding a way for coherence between what we say about ourselves and what we do. We also passed some resolutions, and there are basically 3 kinds of resolutions that we consider. For a couple of years, we've been studying the issue of investment in fossil fuel and actually divestment from fossil fuels. And this is actually something that we should be talking about here in the church. Maybe we should have a forum Maybe the Social Action Clearinghouse could help us on that, because we've been saying this for a couple of years. But we've made the decision that every General Assembly for the next 5 years, there must be a report about how invested we are in fossil fuels and what we're doing about it. There were people who said, let's absolutely divest, period. Bing, 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 clean hands, walk away. There were other people who said, you know, capital is fungible. If somebody divests, somebody else is going to invest. And so the fact that we pull our money out actually robs us of the capacity to go and make resolutions at the meetings of stockholders and boards of directors of corporations. And since we participate on the national level with a number of religious bodies that are thinking about shareholder activism and how we can hold a light onto the corporations in whose where we have our monies invested, the General Assembly made the decision not to take the position of absolute divestiture, but instead reporting, knowing what's real, understanding the actions that we're taking and assessing the consequences of those actions, again, that we're aware, just aware, of the power that we have and maybe sometimes the power we don't have, but the capacity that we have to tend to the places that we put our money. We also are preparing for another long-term study action process, and we had to vote among 5 potential issues to study for the next 4 years. And interestingly, there wasn't a front runner that everyone, that a lot of people were following. So there were 5 issues that were kind of equally weighted. Empowerment, age and ability reconsidered. So some stuff about what it means to be getting older and needing to continue to have access and also to use the power that you have from the capital that you gained. Ending the war on terror, which I will say was my preference, but that didn't win. An examination of escalating inequality, the wealth divide in our country. Gun violence as a public health issue. And renewing and securing our American democracy. And of course, this is really about what a person is and what it's going to take for us to actually come to a place to say that no corporations are not people and no money is not public speech. The winning CSAI, Congregational Study Action issue, was the one on escalating inequality. And I am reminded that several people said this is an anti-escalating inequality. We're not in favor of it. You vote in favor of it to say you're against it. Well, anyway. We also took 3 actions, and so that's an issue that we're going to be looking at in the next 3-4 years, hopefully to develop an actual statement of conscience about the wealth divide. And there are actions of immediate witness, and we passed 3 of them this year, one supporting the upcoming Faith Summit on stopping deportations from the United States, another affirming congregational commitment to gun violence prevention, and another to support as an association a new underground railway from Uganda to safely extract LGBT people from persecution in Uganda. So these are things that we decided, and of course, if they had any force, we could all vote for world peace, and it would go down 100%, and then we wouldn't have to do anything, right? It would be the fact. No, GA is not just about governance, and as a matter of fact, it never has been. The Universalists in our history began meeting in the 1790s in large meetings, tens of thousands of people gathering in a summer tent colony for a week to be with one another, to worship, to think about what Universalism was all about, and actually to encourage one another in some of the work that they were doing earlier for abolition, but later for prison reform and for women's suffrage and against alcohol. So GA, these large meetings that we have been about people meeting people for encouragement, for worship, for clarifying the message, and for finding support. The Unitarians didn't even have a denomination until after the Civil War. We pretend that 40 guys, gentlemen of Boston and their ministers, declaring themselves the American Unitarian Association was a denomination. It wasn't. It was a publishing house, and it took as its model the publishing house established by the first Independent Church of Baltimore, where the first Unitarian publications in our country were published, right here. We were the first. And the AUA was a publishing house, a society for the propagation of Unitarian ideas. We didn't have a denomination until after the Civil War, when we had learned that we could cooperate with one another, largely in the creation of the United States Sanitary Commission, to provide aid to people during the Civil War. And we began to see that we could cooperate with one another on big projects and do something real. One of the first things that the Unitarians, as a collected body, not just some gentlemen, but as denominationally affiliated delegates from congregations, etc., one of the first things they agitated about was that church should not be 1 hour on Sunday, but that every church should have a week-long presence. And how did this church respond to that encouragement? We built this building that you're in. We built this building to be part of a national movement that was having 7-day-a-week church, where there was service, where there was worship, where there was learning, where a working person might feel that they could walk in the door, where they might feel excluded from the hoity-toity sanctuary that we otherwise had. So anyway, this building we're sitting in is a kind of expression of that first 2 decades of Unitarianism as a denomination, not just as a publishing house, but as people who are actually encouraging each other. The sermon today is the covenant to affirm and promote. And that's what our association does. We promote with one another the things that we can do, the people we can be, and the possibilities that we can imagine. So GA has not only been about governance, not only about resolutions, but it's been about innovation. One of the great innovations that was stolen, absolutely stolen from the young adults, was a phenomenon called GA Talks. Opportunities to set aside some time for people just to express opinions. And so I went to one of the GA Talks, and of course a couple thousand people were there, and 3 people were speaking, an atheist, a theist, moderated by an agnostic. And the 3 of them were in a room together talking about their faith, talking about why they sit with one another, connect with one another, strive to find deeper than the surface ways that they are connected with each other in their worldview and their love for life. Each person described themselves. The first word they used was, "I am a mystic." We are a mystical people, a people who are willing to live with a certain amount of insecurity and lack of clarity that's grounded in a profound confidence in our experience, in the sacredness of our lives, and in the capacity we have with one another to be about the transformation of ourselves, of each other, and the world. Yes, indeed, there were workshops, hundreds of them. A great thing is that right now you can go onto the website of UUA.org. You can go to the General Assembly area, and you can see a transcript of almost every workshop. You can see the PowerPoint presentation about changing ideas about membership, about who we need to change to become as we go into the future. You can see the workshop that argues that one of the healthiest things the church can do is to be about renewing its membership and its leadership, so that if there are people who have been in positions for a long time, one of the healthiest things that can happen is for them to come up with a way of transferring power to somebody else, so that a whole new generation of people can feel that this isn't just a place that they attend and watch somebody else do, but they can own it and drive it, and that their dreams can be realized by this mediating institution that we have. But you can go onto the website and you can look at just about every workshop that happened and see many of the PowerPoint presentations. And if you want to pay a little bit of money, you can actually pay to get the recording of the workshop. Yes. You know, what's it like to experience worship with 5,000 people, with 1,000 people, with 5,000 people who are with one another, clearly not having theologically the same set of understandings, and yet clearly using the time of worship with one another as a way to allow themselves to be spoken to allow their hearts to be moved as they will be, and to allow their imaginations to be set free. I have to say that the witness that we were able to make as Unitarian Universalists was very meaningful in the state of Rhode Island. To see the picture in the Providence Journal of the event that Carla spoke about with the hotel workers, to see the thousands of people who were given literature, stuck by our table, part of Waterfire. And you don't know, you may or may not know Waterfire. If you're ever making plans to be in New England, check out the Waterfire website and see if Waterfire is happening that weekend. But Waterfire is a brilliant brainchild of a classmate of mine from a million years ago, that baskets of cedar float just above the surface of the Providence, the Meshaseq, and the Wenasquatucket rivers, where they come together. And people dressed entirely in black, with boats shrouded in black, while Gregorian chants and world-beat music is projected underneath the bridges that span these three rivers. And people carry from a distance a big torch and bring it to the water and then set fire to all of these baskets. And over the course of a half an hour, suddenly there are bonfires floating on the river up and down with music and with tens of thousands of people around. And in the midst of that, the Unitarian Universalists had a concert, had a tent, were distributing literature, and were saying that love reaches out. Love was reaching out to Rhode Island, and love was reaching out especially to people who needed some semblance of hope, some kind of promise that somebody would be there to stand with them. GA becomes less about governments and more about our relationships with one another and our relationships with the world. For me, I'm lucky because professional relationships are very important, and ministers and religious educators, sometimes musicians, sometimes administrators, sometimes a new group we have, membership coordinators, professional membership coordinators. We get to go for a couple of days before the business begins to conduct some of our own business. And for me to be with the UU Ministers Association, to listen to Marshall Gans, who is a friend and who's a professor from the Kennedy School of Government at Harvard University, who worked with Cesar Chavez for 20 years and whose life had been changed by Freedom Summer when he was in Mississippi, and whose life continued to be changed as he became a key organizer for a number of campaigns around the country, including Obama's first campaign. Marshall Gans challenged us to be attentive not just to the resourcefulness that's evident in our communities, not just toward our resources, but to the question of how do we use the resources for power? How do we go from being people who want to, who refuse to sit in the back of the bus, who know they have the capacity to walk to work, but who find a way to organize it with thousands of other people, and therefore not just be resourceful, but be powerful to be able to bring the Montgomery bus situation to a crisis, where the people whose little resources, their feet, were actually people with great power because they organized with one another. And both in Marshall Ganz's lecture to the ministers and to Lindy Ramston's lecture. Lindy Ramston, the former minister of the San Jose congregation, who became the executive director of the legislative ministry of California, that had some challenging work, hard work around marriage equality and unsuccessfully fighting Proposition 8 in California, but also did groundbreaking work in having the California legislature pass the first law in our country that says access to water is a human right in California. And this powerful, powerful movement around water rights needed more than just the resourcefulness of some people, but the actual relatedness of people with people, so that they were organized with one another to deliver powerfully. And in delivering powerfully, not to just see it as a political act, but to know that part of the resourcefulness that we bring to our work is our profound sense of the interconnectedness that we're part of. And we can't escape being part of, connected to everything. And the true knowledge that we have that we don't always experience, but that every human life is sacred. That there's worth and dignity to every human being. And sometimes we don't see it. And yet we come together to be with one another, to notice the beauty in the other, and maybe even to believe that it's here in us too. I've wondered what it would be like for us if, for example, our annual meeting was not just about passing resolutions and electing people. But what would it be if we had a whole day of worship and workshops and encouragement about being the best church that we can be, the best worshiping people and working people, of reaching out people and reimagining people? What would it be like if we could imagine our time with one another is not just about accomplishing certain things, but about accomplishing deep and everlasting things, that each of us might be moved, that all of us might be changed, and that with the world we may be equipped to stand on the side of love, to reach out with love, to reach in and let love change us, our day, our world, our possibilities. Blessed be. The next thing on our order is a prayer and a meditation. And I'm going to ask you to meditate now while I go set up the prayer over on the computer.